Welcome to Dave and Dom Demystify, a FinTech Futures podcast, helping make sense of the world of FinTech and digital finance. Please sit back and listen as the two Ds take a subject and discuss it to make it clearer and easier to understand. Demystify.
Welcome to another episode of Dave and Dom Demystify. I'm obviously joined by Dave, and this week our special guest is Charlie Platt, who's going to help us demystify Fioneer. Welcome, Charlie. Would you like to give us a little bit of an intro to yourself and to Fioneer?
Sure. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me. It's great to be here. Yes, so I'm Charlie Platt. I'm based in the UK. I have two roles. I'm an MD of the banking division of SAP Fioneer, and I'm also the head of the EMEA business as well. I joined Fioneer when we set it up in September 2021. We'll come on to that in a bit more detail. And I've been in the senior leadership since then. I am ex-SAP. I was SAP for 4 years prior to that. But my background is technology and financial services, covering lots of different areas. I started my career in sort of high-frequency algorithmic trading software many years ago, which was when we were doing real-time analytics 20 years ago, which is very exciting stuff at the time, really interesting use cases. And some of that, of course, has continued to come through in what we do now. So a good grounding. But yeah, great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Fantastic. And I kind of picked up on something they said, you're ex-SAP, but this is SAP Fioneer. Can you explain a bit about that? Because I think that's quite interesting.
Absolutely. So SAP, everybody knows, a huge corporate, massive organization, of course, global software vendor, but it services many verticals. In fact, I believe 26 different verticals, although I would struggle to actually name 26 different verticals, but apparently, they service that sort of many. And of course, there's a huge amount of consistency across many different verticals where you have a traditional supply chain, whether you're selling telephones or you're selling pharmaceuticals or you're selling cars, there's a traditional supply chain across there. And whilst financial services, of course, is, I believe, the biggest vertical or industry in the world, you know, it didn't fit into some of the stuff that SAP did, where you talk about that supply chain. Clearly, if you're talking about a general ledger or you're talking about a procurement system or an HR system, that's fine. Those are consistent across all industries. But when you get into talking about things like core banking or core insurance, then that piece of software doesn't have much in common with a traditional supply chain kind of application. SAP's been building core banking platforms for a long time. And taking some absolute generalizations, those applications are really strong, really well developed, and really scalable. But the speed of which financial services has been moving over the last 10, 15 years that we're all familiar with, the fintech boom and all the rest of it, the speed of change has been something that SAP looked at what they did and said, you know what, we're not entirely sure we can keep up with that speed of change in this one area where you're talking about core banking or core insurance. They're fine on all of the other areas, but you know, this one area. So they looked at a load of different models for how they could manage this unique sort of market that we operate in. And they finally came to the conclusion that actually the best way would be to separate it off as a completely separate business. And that created the creation of SAP Fioneer.
Wow. So, I mean, it is a standalone business. I mean, although you've got the name in there, it's a standalone business, which they spun off, which quite frankly, not many corporates do. I mean, that gives you the kind of autonomy, I think, you know, if you really want to make this a separate venture that it would require, right? And that's quite a bold move.
I think a very brave move, sort of a lot of consideration went into this. Of course, SAP doesn't make these decisions easily. But I think they felt there was a need for a very significant investment to come into the business as well, a need for a lot of specialist people to be involved, the right type of people from different areas of the financial services sector, people coming in from banks, people coming in from advisory firms, from consulting firms, as well as the technologists. But SAP felt the best way to do it was to create an organization. They retain an ownership, a 20% ownership in the company. but that's not controlling in any way. It's just an ownership. And we have a very detailed joint venture agreement. And you can imagine, you know, using the name. I mean, even if you look at our logo, the logo is in the shape of the SAP logo. It's different colors and different design, but the actual shape of it's the same. So the connection to SAP remains very strong. But the beauty is that for us, we get the infrastructure and technology readily available through our joint venture agreement with SAP. And all our investment that we have goes into the application layer. So we don't have to worry about databases or security or scalability or any of that sort of stuff. SAP provides us that in the underlying technologies that we utilize. So if you look at really important topics like AI, for example, the skills and the capability and the technology has been developed out for us to just consume in what we do in the actual banking area. But by using banking specialists, and I say banking, I should say insurance as well, because we cover both areas. But banking and insurance specialists just get to use all of those great tools that come from SAP. So the investment that we got in externally, which I can talk a little bit about, but the investment we got externally goes into the application layer and building out the actual products as opposed to building the whole infrastructure from the ground up.
I mean, going back to what Dharmesh said, I think it's a really interesting model because it's actually market's highly competitive, isn't it? And I think it's moving so swiftly that actually to, I guess it might be called a speedboat or something in the parlance of core banking, to actually create something which is a bit more small and nimble, it seems like a really a good idea. How long was the sort of period of introspection around actually let's go for this? And I guess there's a second question, which is the speed of change has been accelerating, but why now? Why over the last few years? Because it's been accelerating for the last sort of 20 years. So I was kind of interested in both of those things.
Yeah, I think this discussion, I know the primary investor that managed a lot of the investment that came into the Pioneer organization had some of these conversations 8 years ago. So they had actually started a long time ago. And you know what it's like. They come in and they go out and lots of different conversations going on. So I think the idea has been around for quite some time. The execution of the idea and exactly the structure of it, I think, was really actively being discussed for a couple of years. I came into it probably 9 months before we actually made the exit, which was in September 21. So I'd been probably involved in it for that period. But you can imagine it's a really complicated thing to do. I mean, just think about the people separation. There are very strong legal laws in many countries.
Germany and stuff like that, yeah.
You know, and there are lots of considerations there for how people move across and the options that are there. And we moved across, I think it was about 550 people across from SAP. We're now north of 1,200. So we've got more people who are not SAP than we have people at SAP. Not that that's an important measure for us, but just it just shows the roads at which we're growing. But the consideration happened for a long time. I think the final decisions really were just, I think is the point that you made, that they really felt the need for a speedboat, for that real expertise to be brought in. And that required, and SAP puts in massive investment into product development, of course, I mean, astronomically huge. And only a proportion of that, I think, was really being able to be put towards the financial services side because it was going into things that were more generic in usage. So they wanted the investment to come in that was very specific for what we wanted to do. And we got a very significant amount of investment. It's publicly available, but the investment has come from the joint venture with a company called Dedic, who are not especially well known. They're very specialist investors who actually work predominantly on family investment money, so passive investors. This is not sort of your traditional big VC kind of organization that everybody would know. They have a very close relationship with SAP over the years. They've done various things together. And we got 550 million euros of investment, which is considerable in this sort of fintech world. we haven't drawn it all down. We're just taking pieces of it, but it's actually there available to us. So I think SAP really wanted to see a very significant investment. They wanted a very significant commitment because these are their customers. You know, the customers that we've moved across, that we've taken across, SAP, you know, is very concerned about not servicing them in the right way. So they wanted an organization that was nimble enough to be able to do exactly what it wanted to do and become agile and flexible, but stable and strong enough that it didn't feel that it was putting its existing customers in some sort of risky situation for something as critical as core banking. So, and the relationship with SAP is still very strong, by the way. There's all sorts of buyback rules and things like that as part of the joint venture, and there's all sorts of coverage in there. And the relationship, I mean, my chairman and CEO talk to the board of SAP probably weekly, I would say. So the connection is extremely strong.
I mean, having sold a company to a larger software company and then, you know, within that organization, almost drowning a little bit because there's so many other products that competed for R&D investment. We tried to kind of spin this out. This is the stuff of dreams. What you've ended up with is the best that anyone could really ask for, because the other thing that I think is that because you've got the full autonomy, I mean, that's every kind of entrepreneurial type company wants. Plus, the amount of funding that you raised is for a few years, I would imagine, for 1,200 people. I mean, that's going to go a long way. So it's a strategic level of funding as well, which also recognizes the opportunity. So I think, like, it's amazing what you've ended up with. For Dave, I don't know how much you've looked at or experienced SAP, but one of the things that I was surprised about was when Charlie talks about owning the infrastructure. They've got their own databases, their own middleware, their own application servers, everything. It's not like there's a portion of software that they've got and then we have to pay some licenses to Oracle or Microsoft or AWS, etc. This is all theirs, right? There isn't anything that isn't theirs, which is unheard of in technology. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
That's the view. I mean, the one thing we have as Fioneer, so we lifted all of the IP of the, let's say, the financial services orientated products. So the core banking, the core insurance, and also the banking and insurance finance products. So what I mean by that is the subledgers that are specifically for banking, for example. So the GL will stay, the general ledger stays with SAP. So if you're a bank and you want to buy a general ledger, then you buy that from SAP. If you want to buy a SuccessFactors HR system, procurement system, you buy that from SAP, even if you're a bank. But when you want to get into something that is banking or insurance specific, like the subledger that you might have in there, then that's when you come to Fioneer. But the great thing is that it's all based on the same stack. So if you're, you know, you're all of your other things that you're doing is based on exactly the same stack that you're talking about. But also we go then front to back. So we go right the way from the user experience on a retail banker, right the way through to the transactions running, right the way through to the general ledger. So the auditors can do a trail from back to front. So we've got that wide piece in terms of the functionality. But what you're talking about there, Dharmesh, is the depth as well of utilizing all of the infrastructure, whether it's the analytics layer or the database layer or whatever it might be. And particularly the more we move to cloud and people just want services, then that just makes it great because we've got all of the stack, we've got access to the data, we've got access to the analytics, we've got the presentation layers, we've just got to build the logic and then we can present it straight to the customer to consume as a service. So it's great in an on-prem world, but I think the more we move to cloud, the more we'll see that coming to the fore as well.
And do you provide your own cloud?
We work with SAP and SAP utilizes hyperscalers. So there are some countries where they don't have the hyperscalers and when we're operating in some markets, but generally our go-to-market is that we will utilize SAP and they have big agreements in place with the main hyperscalers across the world.
One thing I'm kind of interested in as well is in terms of go-to-market and business development. So I come from the agency world, which is very different from the technology world, but I mean, I sold a business to a large marketing conglomerate. And the idea was always that you kind of go to market jointly and with partners and things like that. It never quite worked out like that because I guess there was a lot of legacy in terms of the way that kind of people think. So in terms of how you deal with SAP and getting their salespeople and their marketing really clued up about what you do, is that a kind of big part of what you're doing, or have you found that they just naturally get what's going on?
It is a big part, and it's really important to us, and it's really important to SAP because what we do in banking helps their differentiation as well. So it works both ways. But getting your hands around an organization of whatever they are now, 105,000 people, something like that, is always a challenge. I mean, we've grown nicely. We're above 1,200 or whatever, but still, it's pretty tricky to get yourself around. But the trick is really in the, not the complexity, but the detail of the joint venture agreement that we have between ourselves to ensure that people get incentivized in the right way. So those sorts of models are very much in place. So people know very clearly, and SAP is great at that, right? They're really, really good at creating and have every model under the sun that you can imagine because they've been there for many years doing it. So we have the right models in place to make sure people are clear on the incentivization, where royalties get paid, where the money gets recognized, and all of that sort of stuff. That takes a lot of the challenge out of the mix because the rules are very clear. And it took, a long time in getting the joint venture agreements correct. And that's a key part of it. Otherwise, you know, you just build conflict in all over the place. And we certainly don't want any of our customers experiencing any conflict. We want them to feel the benefit of the two organizations together, not the negatives. It takes time. I think one thing I've learned over the last 2.5 years is it's the things you want to put in place take longer than you expect. I mean, one of the most important things for us has been our culture. We say all of these great things up front. We're going to create this new company. We're going to be agile and we're going to be entrepreneurial and we're going to be creative and we're going to be all of these words that you say. But as we all know, it's much, much harder to put that into practice of what it is that you want to be. And just general business go to market all the time gets in, not in the, you know, it kind of gets in the way because you're just cracking on and doing things. And you've got to step back sometimes and think about how do we build that culture of what we want to be. And that all comes together with how we operate with our partners and what we want to, how we want to be. I say to a lot of people, we go through a stage when we separated the businesses in 21, we were a toddler. We were just trying to learn how to walk on our own two feet. And then you go through these processes very quickly where you suddenly become a teenager and you think, well, actually, now I think we know what we want to be. I think we're really clear on where we want our identity to go and what we want to look like as a business. And then you get to in our early 20s now, probably we know exactly what we want. We know exactly where we want to be in the long term, but we've still got some time to grow up as well. So it's this level of maturity that we've been going through, and it has taken a little bit of time to find our balance exactly, but I think we're in good shape at the moment.
So in terms of your kind of go-to-market proposition, again, it's quite a crowded market. What is it that top of the list in terms of your sales strategy? Is it the SAP thing, or is it the flexibility of the products and services that you have?
Yeah, and I think that's a really good question. And we have a very large customer base, which is this really unusual thing. You're a fintech startup with all of these customers around the world. So we've got two big things we've got to do. One is that we've got to help modernize these existing customers around the world. And me personally, I find this really interesting. It's we've been dealing with this conundrum for years. How do you upgrade these very complex situations? And how do you modernize these things? And everybody always talks about changing the engines on a jet whilst you're flying and all that sort of stuff. It's that we've all talked about it for years, right? And I think we're getting to a point where we're really starting to come up with some smart ideas how we do that. And we as an organization, Fioneer, is much more involved in the, I wouldn't say the implementation, but the big decisions made around the product. SAP was less involved in the implementation. They relied on partners a lot more than Fioneer does. Fioneer is of the opinion that we need to be much closer to the customer and much more involved. We still work with the systems integrators. There's still lots of other people doing work around what we do, but we do need to be more involved in that. So one element is all of those existing customers. How do we help modernize them? How do we grow? How do we add bits onto the side of them? Lots of great work around that sort of area. new product development is really important for us. So a lot of our investment is going into new product development. And when I say product development, I'm not talking about the engines underneath. We've got all the engines we need. We've got lending engines, we've got deposits engines, we've got payments engines, we've got every engine we need. And they're very well, and I would say this one might, but they're very well engineered. And there are things we've got to improve and change, of course, but they're really, really rock solid and very capable. What we're doing now in our investment layer is much more of the business application layer, the end-to-end processes that businesses need. And by doing that, it means that we can also target brand new customers as well. So changing those existing customers we've got, modernizing them, but we really want to be out there winning new, net new names, brand new businesses, some relatively small. There's still this perception that SAP only addresses very large customers, but it's not the case. I mean, we've got some great customers that are public in the UK. You'll see very easily, you can reference the likes of the Bank of London, the first new clearing bank in the UK in, I don't know what it was, 250 years or something. Really interesting use case, very creative bunch of people. And we've got a great deployment in the cloud environment. So I think a lot more around the product set. So we've launched 10 new products in the last 2 years. Again, when I say products, it's the application layer on top of the engines that we already have existing.
So you mean like a credit card or a mortgage, et cetera? You mean those?
Yeah. So a good example is SME banking, right? So it still uses the same core banking engine underneath. It still has the same finance capabilities under there, but it's applying it to the requirements of SMEs. We all know SMEs are killed by, well, cash flow issues and the inability to get access to money at the speed that they need. So bringing our skills from knowing ERP and accounting kind of technology, we allow the connectivity to accounting packages for SMEs, whether it's a Sage or whatever it might be, connected into the account where we're using the AI that we take from SAP and looking for potential cash flow issues that might be coming at a SME owner who doesn't see it coming because they're busy doing what their business is supposed to do, and then producing also a smart lending capability. So when we see this train coming at the SME and we go, do you realize there's a train coming at you, cash flow issue, what do you do next? And helping them through a much more sophisticated, automated process to get to the right funding quickly, and helping in a lot of the analysis at the back end from the underwriters to make the decisions in there. So trying to automate a load of those sorts of things. It's all based on existing technology we have. It's just putting it together in a way that it solves a particular business problem.
That's really interesting. So, I mean, in terms of those products, are they ones you've developed because you believe there is a need, or have you developed them because potential clients and customers have come to you with a problem?
Yeah, a bit of both. I think there are some things, when we set up the business, we did a lot of work with some of the big advisory firms, and they gave us some good advice on future activity, where they thought the markets were going, and some holes or some gaps we had in our offering. So there were some things that we just said, you know what, we know we've got to go and fill those gaps. And we've been doing a chunk of that. But more importantly, I think it's the second part of your question, where we're doing this related to customers. So some of it we're doing ahead of the curve. So we've had conversations with customers where they say that this is something they need, and we go, okay, fine, we'll invest in it. And some of it we're doing with customers. We call it co-innovation. So we say, well, look, we've got 80% of what you need in the product, and there's 30% missing. But actually, of that 30%, 20%, we would really like to keep and put back into the product. And then we have agreements in place where we do some of that co-innovation work in order to improve our product and put it back in. But the really interesting thing is there for me is that you can't do that properly unless you are very close to the customer's requirements. So when I mentioned before about, you know, our involvement in working with the customer, it's not a revenue grab thing. What we're interested is just reducing that distance between the customer, the really detailed knowledge member of the customer, and the programmer, right? You're never going to have them completely next to each other, but reducing that gap as much as possible to make sure that knowledge can get brought back into the product really quickly, and then increasing the cycles of which you release that technology more quickly so it can get consumed by the customer as well. So, and that's something you can do as a smaller business, but when you're colossal, that's very hard.
It's an amazing time, I guess, in the marketplace where actually true innovation can start happening, because the kind of core big building blocks are all there, but it's the sort of smart people are able to take those building blocks and start compiling them to make a real difference. So that rather than, I guess, that Dharma and I have been doing the sort of digital banking for 30 years, we worked out yesterday, almost 30 years. And it feels like this is the first time where true innovation can really start to happen because the building blocks are there and in place. So it's fascinating to hear the approach that you take. I had one final question. I'm sure Dharmesh has got a final question as well. But you talked about the fact that you're, is it managing director for EMEA as well?
Yeah.
I'm really interested. Where do you think kind of true banking innovation is happening in your patch at the moment? I'm fascinated geographically where you think things are hot and where they're not, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, I love this. I love talking about this question because I think it's a really interesting area. I mean, biggest revenues for us will still come from those major markets. For us, South Africa is a massive market, the UK, obviously Northern Europe, and of course DACH, for us being originally a German company. Really, so the big revenues will still come from there for a little bit longer. But the growth I find very exciting in the Middle East and some parts of Africa. We're working on some projects at the moment in the Middle East region, and you just see this, the growth of the population coming into banking, whether it's just because they're young countries, young in terms of the population is young and they're coming in, or it's the underbanked or even unbanked move, you know, the level of wealth increasing, moving into the banking market. And you see some of these countries, the growth is just phenomenal. And of course, it's all going to be digital. And then this is where scalability, the ability to do massive transaction volumes is absolutely key, which we know we can do, which we've proven. And so for me, I think the most exciting stuff I see is probably coming out of the Middle East at the moment, where my revenues are going to come from for the next, my biggest revenues. It's the 80-20 rule, right? The biggest revenues are probably going to come from the established markets for the next year or two. But the real growth is, I think, coming from Middle East and some.
It was almost a leading question from me. I completely concur with your what you're saying. I think the Middle East is a very exciting market, because it feels where that's where the sort of interesting thinking is happening, because you have this confluence, I guess, of sort of a generational thing. They've been slightly behind the curve. They've got existing platforms which need upgrading. But then this huge desire to be the absolutely digital first in terms of everything that they do. So it's fascinating to hear you say that. And I guess it's like all of this stuff is like, there's the growth now, and that will be growth for the future as well, as the sort of traditional markets peak and start declining slightly because of older populations and all the other bits and pieces that kind of happen. It's interesting to see. And, you know, obviously there's sort of some hotspots in Africa as well, which I think places like Kenya and Ghana, which are going through huge kind of changes as well. So that's fascinating to hear. So Dharm, I'm sure you've got one final question and then we're going to have to wrap it. Although, Charlie, it's fair to say we'll probably talk all day. So,
yeah, I mean, look, first, I just want to comment on one other thing, which I found fascinating and actually you should be congratulated for, which is not only the way that the company was set up, but you've talked about what you're investing in is actual products, you know, banking products. You're the first of the core banking vendors that talked about that, really. And quite frankly, congratulations to you, because that's really what should be the focus. Everyone's come on the show and talked about how good their technology is. And yes, I have a passion in that space and I love talking about it. But, you know, I also love talk. I mean, I'm not in it for technology's sake. Technology is an enabler for stuff, right? And most of my career has been spent on doing things that changes the experience for banking customers, all for the bank itself to operate more efficiently, etc. So congratulations for being the first to talk about launching new banking products and not just talking about the technology. But I do want to just touch on one aspect around the technology. And that's because you also mentioned about modernization as opposed to core replacement, which is a hot topic. But if you're a core banking, which you are a core banking software vendor, that's your job really, is to sell core banking. But you've really talked about modernization and fixing experiences or processes for banks, which I also find intriguing. But it's kind of a mantra also that goes with what Bayern are doing. And you guys are involved with Bayern. What's your role with Bayern? Yep. Because I think that's quite fascinating too.
So originally in the SAP days, they were one of the founder members, I think, of the setup and the organization. I think we've always adhered to some of those sorts of standards.
Which is great. I mean, and this ties into, I guess, the modernization story, that it's not all just about replacing a core, but about adding some value wherever, whatever the business priority is, right?
Yeah, I mean, for us, modernization is not about the technology per se. It's about what you're trying to achieve. What are the things that need to be achieved to deliver what you need? So it's a bit like Google Maps for me. We know where we stand today, where we are with the technology, and we know what the ultimate destination is, to have this beautiful core banking platform that does everything. The question is the route you take. The immediate route is just to do an upgrade of all of the software, and it goes the fastest route and it gets you there. But actually, it doesn't achieve some of the things you need to deliver along the way. So the actual route that you need to take is the clever thing. It's the plotting of that route that delivers business value as we go along. So it might take longer, it might be a bit slower, it might be a bit more expensive, but it delivers the things that you need as you choose that other route. So for me, it's about working out that route to get to the destination, as opposed to thinking constantly about the destination, which is this lovely thing. So that's kind of how we look at it.
That's brilliant. Brian, like Dave said, I have got probably a zillion more questions, but we'll leave that for another day.
We can ask Charlie after we start recording. And so thank you so much, Charlie. It's been really brilliant. Fantastic.
Really nice to talk to you both. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for tuning in to Dave and Dom Demystify. We hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and tune in next time as we take another topic and demystify it.